Finance and Revenue is open. Good morning, committee. Good morning, everyone. It feels a little bit like Groundhog Day. We're going to talk today about central assessment. And so I am going to open up a work session on, simultaneously on Senate Bill 611 and Senate Bill 571. There is a new amendment on OLS now on 611. However, it is more conceptual in nature. We're not going to vote on it today, and we are probably going to be refining it over the next few days. And it is the culmination of feedback from the work group. It includes Senator Boquist and from other stakeholders in the governor's office. And Paul and Kyle are here to walk us through it. Okay. Gentlemen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Paul Warner, Legislative Revenue Office. You have that in, on OLS, the Senate Bill 611 conceptual framework, which is kind of, as the chair said, is really the kind of summation of things that have been put together and is really a first shot at trying to pull that all together in an amendment. I did want to thank Alan Dale and Legislative Council. We got this yesterday evening, the amendment that's before you, the dash one. So Alan worked all weekend on that, and I'm sure had a good time. There are three main elements to the conceptual framework, and I'll just walk through these real quickly and to outline what those are. The first is there will be certain changes to all centrally assessed property, and this really goes back to the original concept that was discussed in the work group, and that is the notion of establishing a cap on overall value, that with the intention being for those companies that have a substantial amount of intangible property, there'll be a cap, and the certainty is how much their total assessment would be. And this is the same calculation the department originally worked through, and one that they feel is very can be administered relatively quickly, and that is to apply the historic cost and multiply it by 1.3, and then on the other side, a 5% floor of the total value. So that would be the basis. Again, we're looking at very limited impact on the existing companies that we have. The idea would be potential companies that would invest in the state that would have a lot of intangible property, and they would be provided a cap. The second part is exempting franchise fees, or maybe more appropriately, franchise fee agreements from total valuation. And Kyle has done some preliminary look at the data on that. The idea would be create a second exemption from central assessment, joining the FCC license exemption, which was established in 1999. So those would both of those exemptions would not be applicable to the alternative cap calculation. So if you get your exemptions and you're based on the current calculation, and then you'd not be able to apply them twice under the cap calculation. The major new concept that we have worked on over the last few days, I've been working closely with the governor's office on this, is a special exemption for qualified projects. The idea here is to identify projects that are state-of-the-art communication infrastructure, and there's some very specific language. If you look in section 3 of the dash 1, and you can see that there are specifics in terms of communication services, the speed of those communication services, the coverage or accessibility of those communication services. So those are key elements, and they're specified in Section 3, and that would mean that a project could potentially be qualified, and the qualifying state agency would be the Public Utility Commission, which is designated in the bill and in the amendment. If a project meets those criteria for qualification, they would have a limitation on their value, or there would be one option would be a dollar amount. We did not specify that in the bill. So we're thinking that kind of conceptually what we're looking at is something along the lines of the Strategic Investment Program that has a dollar cap on the amount of property that can be assessed. So that's yet to be determined, and we can work through some numbers with you on that. Or the alternative, and it would be the greater of the two, the alternative would be the total real market value of tangible real and personal property of the company in Oregon. In other words, its tangible property in the state would become its assessed value for property tax purposes.
All right, Paul, could you lay that out a little, what this really looks like or what it means to consumers? We're talking about an incentive if someone comes in with some high-speed internet or broadband, and this is kind of a new wrinkle that was added in last week or at least discussed.
Yes, Mr. Chair, this is I think this is the one element that's not been discussed really in the committee. It grew around the potential of investments coming into the state that could really enhance the state's communication infrastructure. The idea with the, is that there would be significant public benefits to that. If a company can meet these qualifications and lay it out specifically have the meet the standards of the Public Utility Commission that's set in the bill, then they would have an alternative calculation in terms of what their value is. It would either be a fixed dollar amount, or it would be the total tangible property in the state. Of course, what that means is that their intangible property would not be subject to taxation.
So if somebody brings us something that helps rural Oregon broadband or high-speed internet that we don't have now,
yes.
They might qualify for that SIP-like agreement.
Exactly, Mr. Chair. And the key qualifications would be around speed, which would be based on a national average, and also accessibility, that it becomes accessible to a certain proportion of a market so that it's widely available where that investment takes place.
Thank you.
Also, Mr. Chair, I'll add that, we've been working closely with the governor's office, and Vince Porter will be here and have some comments on that. The third element is really the substance of Senate Bill 571, which is the clarification of the definitions around data centers. We've gone back and forth, getting a lot of input on what's the appropriate language. This is kind of the latest where we're at in terms of defining data centers, what is and what isn't. And the concept really remains basically what you've talked about earlier, and that is that data centers are not a company that has only data center activity in the state does not constitute being a communications company. So having a data center doesn't qualify you for being communication, therefore central assessment. There is still the kind of the threshold, which now is 5% communication-related activities of the total value would not put you over the threshold. Now that's been bumped to 10%. Keep in mind that these are communication-related activities. They're not non-communication activities. And I think there's been a lot of concern expressed about that, and the bill does have some language around what is not. And the major areas have been things like retail activity, for example, or energy-related activities that companies may get involved in. And the amendment makes it very clear that those would not be counted toward the threshold. They're not communication-related activities. So that gets back to really kind of one of the original purposes of this bill or two bills dealing with central assessment and communication properties.
Paul, could you just remind us again the purpose of the 10% threshold, 5% now, moving to 10%, why that's there and necessary?
Mr. Chair, the threshold is there to for companies that are data centers that may be involved in some ancillary activities which would fall under the communication definition. So it's a way of saying if there's a limited amount of activity, this doesn't mean that you're going to be assessed as a communications company. The concern about allowing too much, the concern about allowing a company, for example, to become in any company that has data centers from not being centrally assessed would create a large incentive for a company to come in and invest in a data center, and then the rest of the company would not be centrally assessed. So obviously that's something that wouldn't work in terms of property tax compliance. So what we're looking for here is giving the company some flexibility to make some investments that might fit under that communication definition, but wouldn't put them into the central assessment category. On the other hand, once you become active enough in communications, then you fall into that category, and so you're going to be centrally assessed as are other communication companies, so you're not creating an uneven competitive environment within that industry. But there has been a lot of discussion around these other activities that these companies are involved in, and again, there's an effort in this bill, and we may need to keep working through this language to make sure that's the best we can do in terms of clarifying that. But a lot of issues around what kinds of activities, communication activities. I think the department's been very clear when some of their efforts around rules that if they're not communication-related activities, then they will not be applied to this 10% test.
Thank you.
Kyle, did you want to? Sure. For the record, Kyle Easton, Legislative Revenue Office. And just following up on what Paul just spoke about, I do have one chart. It's in OLIS. Get it pulled up here. It's titled SB 611-1 Revenue Change. And we've looked at some figures in the past. We were talking about the 1.3 figure with historic costs and also with historic cost less depreciation. But what this chart is here is it has the same historic original cost times 1.3, and then also included that is the franchise exemption as well. So these numbers differ a little bit from what's been presented here, but that's part of folding in the franchise exemption. And one thing of note, I combined it partially. There's some confidentiality reasons, but also companies could get one or the other. So they could possibly qualify for some tax relief using the 1.3 cap, but they could also, they might get more or less relief through using the franchise exemption. So there could be some overlap there. However, they're not. It's not double counted, so either get one benefit or the other. So the total loss is estimated at about $7.5 million using 2014-15 fiscal year numbers. So if we applied these changes to the past year's tax statements, that would be your revenue loss and your shift. So these would be kind of the base figures for estimating a revenue impact going forward, depending upon what the final language would be.
And the 511.3, I'm sorry.
Mr. Chair, that's the assessed value change. So that's the amount of assessed value that's taken off the roll, essentially. So it's that assessed value change multiplied by an assumed tax rate gets you to the $7.5 million and $1.2 million figures there.
Okay.
Mr. Chair.
A lot to digest.
Yeah.
Senator Riley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And how does that stack up to the 2009 and before revenue? If we were under the rules, the 2009 rules, where would that be? What shift would that be?
Chair Hess, Senator Riley, I don't have that chart. We discussed a chart similar to that in previous committee meetings. I'd have to pull it up to look at the numbers specifically. Again, I didn't include it on this one. I should have at this point. But we're looking right now, I believe the most recent fiscal year for property tax dollars, we're talking about $250 million total in for centrally assessed. And if I'm remembering correctly, the deferred billing credits, we talked about that, is in about the $23, $24 million range per year. So that's kind of the difference, I guess, between 2008-09 with those figures growing more forward. Originally they were like 13, 14 million per year, but now we're up to in about the 20 million per year different range. But I can definitely provide that chart and have these numbers in it, the one similar to I provided previously that kind of had each one shown next to it.
Do that next time.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Further questions? Okay, so this framework consists really of three things: to try to cap centrally assessed properties, creates an incentive that doesn't exist now for a communications company that provides high-speed internet, broadband that doesn't exist now, and a further clarification of the data center category. And we're trying to combine these into one bill. And we have a concept here that will be refined in the coming days, so that's kind of where we are, and it feels like progress. Senator Bartsugger?
So, Kyle, on the 7.5 million revenue loss, that's at the county level?
Chair Hass, Senator Bartsugger, it would be, it's all the districts together. So it would be counties and local districts that would feel the revenue loss, but county districts specifically would only be part of that. It would also be schools.
Sure, all the local districts.
Yes.
Counties are about 17% roughly of the.
Yeah, and this the revenue loss figure, it could be isolated depending upon where the properties are located now. It's fairly dispersed throughout the state, but there could be different areas that'll feel a little bit differently. It may not be all 36 counties necessarily.
But there's no state income tax.
No, this would not, no. Senator, it would not affect state other than through the school funding formula and all that. But.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Thanks, gentlemen. Vince Porter from the governor's office. Been a stalwart contributor to this effort. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Chair Hass, members of the committee. My name is Vince Porter. I'm the governor's policy advisor on jobs and the economy. Paul asked that I'd maybe dive a little deeper into the Tier 2 concept that was sort of put together last week. And I think really what a lot of people came to was to have a very aggressive structure, tax structure for the outcome that we're all looking for in the state of Oregon, which is namely a broadband infrastructure that would be among the fastest in the United States. So from that, we kind of worked backwards and thought through how aggressive of a benefit that would, and also identify the key things that would define a fast speed. So it's commonly looked at across the country that 1 gig of symmetrical service, so that means being able to upload and download at that speed, is considered state of the art. We laid that down as an example of a criteria, but we also wanted to include two other things. One was the listing that the price structure ought to be consistent with at least within some range within the country, so that a provider couldn't offer this service, but at such a large number where it's not really obtainable for the consumer. And then also giving some sort of threshold that the amount of accessibility, acknowledging that it's unlikely that immediately a provider could provide service to 100% of their customers in that first year, but tier it up in a certain way where they have to ramp it up and provide it to a larger amount than just one neighborhood or one hotspot within their community. Also, we've talked to the PUC, and they felt we need to continue the conversation, but they felt it was within their realm of expertise that they could also provide some level of certification for this service, and also track it over multiple years, so that a provider couldn't make that investment at the beginning of their term and then not continually upgrade it to the point where, you know, 5-10 years down the road, they're no longer providing a state-of-the-art service. So that was the thought behind having the PUC look at this and certify it every 5 years. That's more or less the basic framework. It's fairly simple, I hope. And you know, as I think what was determined was that the while the exemption of franchise may not be motivation enough to provide this, that this would be an alternative to get ultimately the outcome that we're looking for in our communities.
The goal here then is how would you articulate that?
The goal, I mean, I think the original thought was the goal is to provide an incentive or a motivation to have one of the top five broadband infrastructures in our state and invite in competition, whether they're existing providers or providers that are not currently providing service in our state, to come in and make the investment that we're looking for in our communities.
Okay. And, sir, your position on the other sort of two areas, the cap and the data centers?
Chair Hess. I think we're fine with the data centers. We're fine with the notion of the franchise exemption. I think, you know, we've gone through a lot of iterations of what is the best. I'm not sure it makes everyone happy, but I think that's probably a good example of maybe we're getting to the right deal.
Questions of this board? Senator Boquist?
Thank you. I mean, I just have two sweeping things for feedback later. Sure. We had this discussion before, and of course you've been involved in discussions up front, and obviously we have a new governor, and this is an aggressive nature here, and aggressive meaning that everybody's equally unhappy, but so on and so forth. And I think at a point before we actually move forward, it would be good to know that this governor versus the one 2 weeks ago has been briefed and is knowledgeable and at least supportive of the concept. And the second thing before we move forward is, as you mentioned, Vince, is to close the loop with POC and see, okay, what, so we have kind of a better, more of a warm and fuzzy that POC can do this.
Chair Hess, Senator Broquist, thank you. I will follow up with you this afternoon on our Governor Brown's position on this. I think they're generally, though, open to this framework. And in regards to the PUC, also, we plan to have follow-up conversations today. The gentleman who I spoke with was on vacation on Friday, so I didn't want to take too much of his time on Friday, but he was very open to it, and we'll certainly follow up.
Thank you.
Probably
thank
be a good idea to have them in tomorrow and talk about some refinements. And I think it makes, I mean, just personally speaking, it makes more sense for the PUC to do the certification than Business Oregon, it seems. Yeah. Closer to their wheelhouse.
Chair Hess, members of the committee, I think that's true. We did talk to Business Oregon. They do have a broadband specialist in Business Oregon. And I think there's room for all the agencies to work together on this, but PUC seemed, even talking to Business Oregon, seemed like the most logical place for this kind of certification.
More a comment than a question. I don't know how, what language to use there, but you know, I kind of worry that we, you know, when we see above the speed of 1 gigabyte per second, I perceive it as by the time we get done with this bill that language will be obsolete. So I don't know how else to write it, but I just kind of hate to see stuff like there because we just have to come back and fix it very soon.
Chair Hess, Senator Bart Sugar, I
faster than a speeding bullet.
There you go. That'll probably work better.
What about state of the art?
Yeah.
Chair Hess, Senator Bart Sugar, I hope that is maintained some level of state of the art by the end of the session. Mm-hmm. But it is important to we wanted to lay at least a baseline so that what we're striving for, which is currently something that doesn't exist in our state today, it's our understanding. But it definitely should be intended that the PUC upgrades that criteria over, you know, consistently so that we don't fall behind.
And for now, that is a fairly standard phrase of high-speed internet.
Chair Hess, it's my understanding, I'm happy to follow up with this, but we had some people do some work, and that's a very that's a very fast network right now.
Right. Edwards?
No?
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
It's about time I'm dead. I'm so
Paul, did you want to finish up or follow up?
Okay, Mr. Chair, if you wanted to invite anybody else up.
I know this amendment is relatively new, meaning half an hour. So if someone is here who has digested it already and has a conclusion on where to go next, you're invited up here now, but if not, let me turn it over to Dr. Warner.
Okay.
Close it out.
Okay. Thanks, Mr. Chair. As we said at the beginning, this is something we had tried to put together over the weekend, so it's really a first shot at the language, so certainly would appreciate input and thoughts from the committee and from others on possible changes or reactions to it. We'll continue to work on it and refine it. So tomorrow we'll invite the PUC to come in and testify and get other comments about it. But I think we're where your agenda for the next couple of days is intentionally left light, so to give you an opportunity to work and spend some time on this concept and Senate Bill 611.
Thank you. And for anyone and on the committee looking at other bills that are stacking up here, please be patient. It's important to get this bill out. There are some potentially enormous economic development opportunities for the state as soon as we can get this cleared out of the legislature and into law. So that's why time is of the essence for this bill. So thank you all. I'm going to close the work sessions on Senate Bill 611 and 571 and carry them over until tomorrow. And there's no other business before us, so we will adjourn.
All as
so we will adjourn.